Today on the 21st Show, it's been 3 years since George Floyd was killed by a police officer in Minnesota, followed by a summer of unrest and a reckoning over race in America. At least, that's what we were told at the time. Today, we're revisiting that fraught summer, remembering how it felt day to day, talking about what's happened since, the lessons we've learned, and the lessons we failed to learn. And we're going to talk about where we're going next. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WCBU in Peoria, WNIJ in DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, the news from NPR. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. No justice, no peace. No peace. The spring of 2020. It was hot. Everyone was on edge after more than 2 months of pandemic-induced lockdown. And then came what would be called a reckoning on race in America.
It was a painful night in Minneapolis and a day of difficult questions about the death of George Floyd, his treatment by the police, and the department's relationship with citizens of color. All of this captured tragically on video when Floyd told the police, "I can't breathe."
"I can't breathe. Please, the knee of my neck. I can't breathe.
Bro, get in the car, man.
I will.
Get in the car.
I can't move.
I've been waiting the whole time, man. Get in the car, Mama.
When you hear someone calling for help, you are supposed to help. This officer failed in the most basic human sense.
George Floyd!
In Minneapolis, outrage over the death of George Floyd. Yesterday, hundreds gathered to protest his death in police custody on Monday. By nighttime, police used tear gas on crowds as they were demanding justice in the case.
The former police officer found guilty in his death, Derek Chauvin, was sentenced by a Minnesota judge today to 22 and a half years in prison.
I'm not going to attempt to be profound or clever because it's not the appropriate time.
Judge Peter Cahill said his sentence was based strictly on specific facts of the case and the law, not on public opinion, not to send any message, though he had a personal one.
I want to acknowledge the deep and tremendous pain that all the families are feeling, especially the Floyd family. You have our sympathies.
George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, those names, those sounds, a man dying on camera. In 2020, we were told we were living through an inflection point in American history. But 3 years later, what really happened? What lessons have we learned? What lessons have we failed to learn? Here at the 21st Show, we had a number of conversations on these topics in the summer of 2020. And as inevitably happens in just about all news media, new stories came up and we move on. So today we're revisiting the spring and summer of 2020, the summer of our supposed racial reckoning. And we're talking about it with two people we spoke with back then and a new voice in our conversations. First, Dr. Cynthia Langtu is a professor of clinical psychology at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. Longtime listeners might remember she was particularly generous with her time throughout that first couple years of the pandemic, as many of us struggled to maintain our mental health. Dr. Langtu, welcome back. It's great to speak with you again.
Thank you so much for having me back for this important conversation.
Also with us, Professor Eric McDuffie. He's an associate professor in the Department of African American Studies at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. He also joined us in 2020. Professor McDuffie, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me back.
And finally, a new voice in our conversation belongs to Sindra Gurdes. She's heading into her senior year at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champain, majoring in African American Studies. Sindra is originally from Paxton, Illinois. In addition to being a student, she's also an advocate. Sindra, thank you so much for being with us and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And listeners, as ever, this program is at its best when it is a collaboration with you. So we want to hear what you think about what happened in 2020 and what's happened since. Did we learn the lessons? Did we forget the lessons? 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Dr. Langto, I want to begin with you, and I just want to maybe begin on a personal note. Can you just share what you remember about where you were, what you were doing when you first heard about the killing of George Floyd?
On a personal level, that's one that I've been reflecting on quite a bit. I have two boys who are now 15 and 17, and at the time were 12 and 14. And I remember hearing the news. I never watched the video. I will never watch the video. And even hearing the sounds of George Floyd asking for his mother in the clip earlier is very stirring. But as a mother, that was so moving to me, to know the pain that was experienced by so many others, right? But that I took so personally as a mother, and wondering what I should tell my children about what was going on. We were, you know, in COVID lockdown at the time, we were at home all together. And they began hearing from their classmates that something was going on. And they asked me, Mom, what is happening? And I struggled with what to tell them. I struggled with what to let them know. And when I let them know that something really horrible had happened, what they asked me was, why didn't anyone do anything? And I wasn't sure how to answer that question. And in the years since, we've had so many great conversations about what folks have been doing. And I'm really glad to have this conversation, this continued conversation about what folks are doing. But I'll say, I did take it quite personally as a mother, as a Black woman, as a Black mother. This hit hard.
Professor McDuffie, I want to begin the same question with you. What do you remember about that spring and summer of 2020?
Well, just to echo the previous speaker, I had never heard the audio of George Floyd screaming for his mother. I have never watched the video in its entirety. I've seen little clips, but I've never heard that famous clip of him calling, screaming for his mother. And just hearing that, I'm speechless, really, frankly, just all that pain just resurfaced. I too, as an African-American, as an African-American parent, as an African-American father of two African-American teenage children, just the events of 2020 and the ongoing racial turmoil, state violence against Black people and people of color really hits hard and home. There's just thinking about 2020, I mean, it was a surreal moment, right? We were, as you noted, we were on lockdown. The pandemic was very much in effect. And of course, really in its early stages, we didn't even know how bad it would get at that time. And again, just, seeing and hearing the anger, but also at the very same time, I did see something very exciting at that very moment, seeing, of course, millions of people taking to the streets, not only across the US, but across the world, was indeed inspiring. But in terms of, where I was at that very moment, or just thinking back to where I was at that moment, yeah, that's what was going through my head, just the anger and frustration of George Floyd and countless others, Black people, including, of course, Black girls and Black women being killed. And then, of course, just the massive upsurge of protests in the streets.
I do feel like I should probably apologize to both you and Dr. Langto for playing that tape when you'd so studiously avoided it. I'll leave it at that. Sindra Gurdes, I want to ask you, if I understand correctly, you were about to be graduated from high school or had just graduated from high school at this time. As some of the other guests have said, we were in lockdown. How did you learn about this? How did you react to it?
So, yeah, I was actually preparing for my high school graduation and kind of in the midst of unknowing about, you know, the pandemic, but also unknowing of, you know, what the future in my academic career would become. And also, you know, how I was going to graduate from high school. So like many others, I was at home and like the two last speakers before me, unlike them, actually, I did watch the 8-minute video of George Floyd on social media. I saw it on Twitter. It was kind of plastered everywhere. So I do applaud the two before me that have not watched it, because it is triggering, and hearing, you know, that recording of him, you know, calling for his mother who at the time who had already passed. So it made it very, very real that he was calling for his mother in, you know, in that video, because she was already gone. But yeah, I was just about to graduate from high school in early June, and, you know, senior year was kind of taken away to protect others and to keep us all safe and keep us all healthy. And I was sitting at home getting ready, you know, for my, you know, my freshman year of college at the University of Illinois, and just waiting, in a period of waiting, to see, you know, what to be told to do next, when to, you know, when to jump, when to leap. And I was young. I was just 18. And I mean, now I'm 21, a senior at the University of Illinois. But back then, I was just a senior in high school. I thought I was on top of the world. But I'd say what had happened during the summer of 2020 really put my life into perspective of what could happen to any African American man or woman. Mm.
So, Sindra, you were part of the protest movement, as I understand it. And this is something that really rose up. I mean, obviously there have been many of these similar cases before, some on video, some not. This one really galvanized people in a way that we had not quite seen nationally before, at least not in a long time. Can you talk about what moved you to get involved?
So I'm from a small town called Paxton, Illinois, which is about 25 minutes north of the university, where it was 0.9% African American and Black students in the school district totally. And I had a long list of things that have traumatized me and pushed me forward into the person that I am today. And I had a large sense of loneliness, not during COVID, but before that, of loneliness and not feeling like I belonged. And when the protest first began, when I first heard about the protests ongoing, I have several connections with Champaign-Urbana community. They had reached out to me and they said, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to be outside of the Urbana Police Department. You know, make sure you wear your mask, make sure you distance yourselves, and make sure you're respectful. And that's exactly what I did. I came down here. I remember it was an afternoon and I was standing on the corner near the old Dallas and Company, and I had my sign and there was a group of people. And I remember thinking, you know, it's a crazy time because, you know, COVID was happening. And I mean, we had all just, you know, some of us not had seen it, but a lot of us had seen in firsthand the killing of George Floyd. And I remember thinking, you know, this is dangerous. It's dangerous to be out here. I'm putting a lot of people at risk, me being here. I'm doing everything that I can to protect myself and the people that I love. But I feel like protesting is exactly what I believe in, and the protection of every person in the United States and abroad. And protesting, you know, police brutality is something that I very strongly believe in. And I remember that was just the first protest that I went to, and I felt like I just needed to be there. I needed that comfort. I needed, you know, to be within a space of people who, you know, were within a similar mindset, that they were hurt. They needed to be within a community of people after being away from people so long. And, It was very moving to see the amount of people that came, the amount of people that honked in, you know, support. And there was people who didn't support it. And if, even in Champaign County, they were respectful about not agreeing with things. And it was a very moving moment in my life.
Mm. Dr. Langtu, why, what, we heard a little bit there from Sinjar talking about the sort of the psychological need she had to be with other people at this time. Can you talk about what you saw in your practice about why this particular episode was so galvanizing for so many people?
Yeah, and thank you so much for sharing your story. That was really powerful. And I think about what it must have been like to be a young person making sense of the world. And I think that that's exactly what was happening. It was, we were all at home, most of us, right? Our essential workers were out there working, but most of us were at home. Captive audiences, if you will, going through this global pandemic. And then this incident happened, right? That echoes many other incidents that had happened. We still couldn't breathe from Eric Garner. And then this not breathing happened. And so I think it was a perfect storm, if you will, of folks sitting and reflecting at home, right, in a really deep way. And then several horrible incidents happened that are racialized. And then this happens, and the entire world was watching. I remember soon after the incident, actually several of my colleagues in Australia, Aboriginal and white colleagues, we pulled together. And in New Zealand, and we had a Black Lives Matter discussion internationally. And part of what my Aboriginal colleagues shared was how watching George Floyd's murder reverberated against their own experiences. And so I think that the world was on pause, and that pause was pregnant. And then this horrible thing happens that allows everyone to reflect on the racialized trauma that is at the foundation of our country. And it was really painful, continues to be, but it wasn't just for us in the U.S. It was all over the world, and it reverberated.
Yeah. We're going to have to take a break on our program, but we're going to continue this conversation when we come back. We also want to hear from you. 800-222-9455 is the number to join us today. 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Please stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. All on our program today, for the entire program, I should say, we are looking back on the spring and summer of 2020. The murder of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, among others, galvanized a nation. There were street protests. There was legislative action in response to this. More substantive. Here in Illinois, there were significant changes made to the criminal justice system, although some of those are still being fought over in court, such as the so-called Pretrial Fairness Act, the end of cash bail here in Illinois. Nationally, we saw Juneteenth made into a federal holiday. And we're reflecting on what lessons we learned from that summer and what maybe failed to stick. What have we failed to learn from that time? We're talking about all this with two voices who were with us during that summer, Professor Eric McDuffie in the Department of African American Studies at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, also Dr. Cynthia Langtu, Professor of Clinical Psychology at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. And also with us is Sinjar Gurdes, who is heading into her senior year at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. She's been talking about her own activism following the murder of Floyd, as well as her experiences as a student and someone growing up in Paxton, Illinois, where, as she said, there were just 0.9% of the students in the school were African-American in that community. Professor McDuffie, I want to ask you, continue in this vein, about America's, you know, the sort of broad reaction that summer. Did anything surprise you about how, I mean, we'd certainly seen protests before in Ferguson, Missouri, after Eric Garner, as Dr. Langtu said, something changed that summer. And it wasn't just people taking to the streets. We saw corporations, media companies taking a different tack. What did you make of that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it hit us all. It was quite apparent that the scale, the size, the intensity of the protests that occurred on every inhabited continent on the planet. But I think what was most apparent and most powerful is that you had a range of people. So a kind of politics of solidarity, Black folk, white people, folks of color. And also, I think what was important about those protests, the way in which Black women, Black queer folk were really at the forefront in leading Black Lives Matter protests. And so certainly that's one thing that stands out. I would say another issue that stands out is the way in which those protests mainstreamed conversations about defunding the police, prison abolition, critical discussions of capitalism and structural racism, conversations that had been, of course, going on for decades among activists, scholars, and of course, folks both in and outside of prison. But the way in which those protests really helped to mainstream critical conversations, albeit for a short period of time in some ways, about prison, about policing, about racial injustice, not just in the U.S., but globally. I think for me, that was one of the most powerful takeaways.
I want to go down to the phones at 800-222-9455. You're always welcome to join our conversation on this show, 800-222-9455. And Joe is calling from Champaign on line four. Joe, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, good morning. Calling in just because it still resonates very clearly. I never watched the killing of George Floyd, but my youngest watched it with his mom, who happens to be of European descent. And he was insistent that she became a part of a solution. My oldest had always been very vocal about it. He's now 20, was going into his senior year then. This is very important, I mean, that we all are part of a solution. I mean, they went to the protest. It was the first protest my partner at the time had ever been to, and my sons wanted her to be a part of it because, unfortunately, being of privilege, she was always able to stand aside and say, it's not my issue, but it's all our issue. It's very important that we all take a role and ownership for what happens in our community. George Floyd hasn't happened in our community as it has, but there are lots of George Floyds that are alive but who have been harassed by the police. And we ought to take a role in the solutions rather than just sitting back and saying somebody else can do it.
Joe, I really appreciate your call. Do you think, in your perspective, do you think that there has been enough sort of stick-to-itiveness with the passion that there was in that first summer?
Absolutely not. I think we have an attention deficit society where, I mean, it was a big thing in 2020, but now in 2023, we've jumped onto something else. And I think we've got to keep ourselves fully vested in the conversation and also in the actions that take place, not just the protests, writing letters, I mean, holding our officials and our elected officials accountable, holding our police force accountable, because it is very important that, I mean, as a person who did not grow up in this country but has lived in this country for over 40 years, I understand that I am seeing my complexion is my weapon. And if we don't change those perceptions, my sons will not be safe. And I want that not just because it's a selfish way to say my sons will not be safe. I want each and every son and daughter to be safe in this society, not just to be stopped randomly and harassed randomly because their complexion is seen as a weapon. And that is something that we've got to find ways to stop ourselves from doing as a society.
Joe, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it. Dr. Langto, I wonder if you want to respond or reflect on anything that we heard there.
Yeah, a couple of things that I want to say to Jill. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Also, I applaud, you know, the kind of relationship it seems that you foster with your children, that they would be able to ask for what they need, to say, hey, we want, you know, our parents to be a part of the solution. And I so appreciate that kind of openness. And that's absolutely what we need. The other piece that's really important about what Joe just shared was something that I want to share about race and racism in America. I think we often think about race and racism as a problem for Black people. And it is, because people are harmed due to racism and Black people are harmed due to racism. But the reality is that racism does not belong to Black people. Racism is a structural problem that impacts every single person in America. And it's torn at the fabric of our union and will continue to do so until we address it appropriately. And so what I would say is that Joe is absolutely right. We need to make spaces for our children to be able to speak about what they need, and that racism isn't Black people's problem, but it's a problem in America that all of us need to be a part of the solution.
I want to play a piece of tape here from another one of our conversations we've had on this program. This was following the death of Tyree Nichols, a Black man, at the hands of police officers, some of whom were also Black. And at the time, we spoke with Professor Milton Nett Craig from Sam Houston University's Department of Criminal Justice and Criminology. And this was her thoughts on how policing had changed in the last few years.
I think that there have been steps with many agencies towards transparency. So there have been several that released their traffic stop data, having community town halls and other engagement opportunities. But on a whole, these are almost, their impact is very surface, and there hasn't been true attention to the problems that are embedded within the policing institution.
Professor McDuffie, you mentioned this, the idea of some of the ideas that were mainstreamed in 2020 about changing the way American criminal justice is delivered or making it more just. What do you think about what has and hasn't changed since 2020?
Well, I think, there have been various reports that have shown that actually there's been an increase in the number of Black people killed by the police since 2020. And I think perhaps the most powerful takeaway from the events of the last 3 years is the extent of the backlash against Black Lives Matter, against the protests of 2020. I mean, we're in a full-scale backlash against the victories or parent victories or raising of attention around policing and racial injustice that occurred in 2020 and indeed of the last 40 years. So I'm not quite as optimistic perhaps as the previous speaker was about the efforts of by various police departments to change their behaviors. I mean, here just in town or in Champaign County, of course, up in Rantoul, there were two young African-American men shot and killed by the police, Azan Lee and Jordan Richardson. So it seems to me that that there is considerable work that still has to be done and that we are, in fact, seeing things in some ways get worse than they were in 2020.
Sindra, I wonder if you and your fellow students talk about that. Things backsliding? Do you feel this backlash?
I feel like a lot of my fellow classmates within the Afro department, we have several conversations. And we talk a lot about the ongoing issues, specifically policing targeting the Black community, because there are, you know, several safe havens on campus at the University of Illinois, the Black Culture Center and the Latinx Culture Center, that a lot of students spend a lot of time in, where very important conversations are had among students and faculty and staff. And we do have a lot of conversations about some of the students on campus who have been harassed or Most recently, we did have a conversation about Jordan Richardson in Rantoul, because, you know, with the power of social media now, these things are being talked about on a much larger scale. And I saw those actually on TikTok that a lot of people are on currently, and you kind of see it go across your feed. And every once in a while, you might see, you know, somebody's lifeless body on the ground, and that's very triggering. And on Twitter, you see it. So it's a very important conversation that students are having specifically on campus, because there is a large police presence on the campus of University of Illinois. You're walking down the main quad and a squad car is, you know, walking with you. I mean, driving with you down the main quad. You're kind of like, okay, are we here to protect students? Are we here to, you know, kind of make sure everything is okay? Or like, what can happen in a split second? You never really know. But I do think there has been an increase in policing within all of our communities. Black Lives Matter really honed in on defund the police, which was very polarized and some say misunderstood in what defunding the police means. And I do see at the University of Illinois, they do send out these emails letting us know what is changing, what is going on with trainings and body cam footage, and sending other personnel to assist with, you know, a non, quote unquote, like threatening situation. So it's, there's a give and then there's a take, that students and everybody involved in the community, they don't have, you know, all the information at hand until it happens to them, until they're profiled or until they're, you know, stopped and asked what they're doing and whatnot. So I feel like there's a give and there's a take, and it's an ongoing situation.
Dr. Langtu, we need to take a break in about 3 minutes again here, but I wonder, you mentioned at the beginning of the program that you avoided watching the footage of George Floyd's murder. And we just heard Sindra talking about how these episodes are everywhere on social media. And young people we know are, or many of them anyway, are often on social media. They're seeing these things maybe even before they can realize what they're seeing and have a chance to stop it. How do you advise patients or just young people in general about living in this information environment with these sort of terrible images and stories coming to them?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I think sometimes you will see something that's unexpected, and that will happen. And so pay attention to what's happening in your body. Pay attention to how you feel. Pay attention to headaches, stomach aches, heart racing. That happens when something is unexpected that you see that's disturbing. But I would say the lion's share of what folks end up seeing or hearing that's disturbing to them is actually because they choose to. And that's where I think that I ask folks to hit pause. Right, to hit pause and figure out how to balance your desire to understand what's happening with the potential impact that it will have. If you've seen a video in the past and you noticed some of the pieces that I mentioned, heart racing, headache, distractedness, then you might say to yourself, maybe I don't need to watch this next video, right? And so paying attention to your well-being, hitting pause and making a choice about whether or not you'll watch instead of allowing it to just roll. And then of course, how much we take in, right? I think that especially during lockdown, we were watching so much more social media, listening to more, watching more television. Now we can decide how much we want to take in, pay attention to the impact, and keep making wise decisions about what's going to keep us well, while also balancing what we want and need to know.
And, you know, I just to be clear for my own sake, I obviously the problem is not as much the fact that these videos exist. It's the problems that these videos are documenting, that these episodes are still happening in American life. And we are talking here on the 21st show today about 3 years since the summer of 2020, America's racial reckoning after the murder of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery. And those were just the latest episodes. Of course, there was Michael Brown, who was killed by the police in Ferguson, Missouri, Eric Garner in New York City, and many others that I'm not going to name them all now. But 2020 was different. What did we learn? What did we fail to learn? And What has been the source of this backlash that we've seen since that time? We're talking about all this with Dr. Cynthia Langtu from the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, Sindra Gerdes, who is a senior at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, an advocate and activist there, and also a student in African-American studies, and Professor Eric McDuffie, who is in the Department of African-American Studies at the U of I. 800-222-9455 is the number to join us today. We're going to continue this conversation when we return. This is the 21st Show. Please stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're reflecting on the summer of 2020, the summer of protests after the murder of George Floyd, and what's changed since then, what hasn't changed. We're talking a little about the backlash that has developed to some of the efforts to change criminal justice and policing in America. We've talked about defunding the police, which was either overstated or misunderstood, perhaps intentionally misconstrued, the idea mostly being to reallocate funding to more positive things for communities that have experienced over-policing in the past. I digress. We're talking about all this with Professor Eric McDuffie, who is in the Department of African American Studies and History at the University of Illinois. Also, Dr. Cynthia Langtu from the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, and Sindra Gerdes, who is a senior at the University of Illinois majoring in African American Studies. 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation today. 800-222-9455. I want to play another audio clip as we get into this last part of our conversation today. This one is from Yamiche Alcindor. She was part of a panel discussion at the South by Southwest conference. She, of course, is an NBC News correspondent, formerly with the PBS NewsHour. This is what she had to say about America taking one step forward, two steps back with regard to race.
I will say, I think the thing that makes me a little nervous is that we are living in a country where we had this inflection point after George Floyd, and we had this quote-unquote, you were talking about sort of the crazy conversations that we were having during Trump. We had those crazy post-racial society mm-hmm. conversations where I was like, I'm sorry, I walked down the street and I'm still black. What post-racial society could we ever even, like, why is that even a phrase that was ever even invented? So I think that I'm a little worried about whether or not we just have more inflection points. That's what America does. We free enslaved people, and then we have Reconstruction and KKK. George Floyd gets strangled and murdered, and we have a conversation about diversity, and then critical race theory happens and we're banning books. I'm really kind of still watching sort of what America does, but America historically has always done this thing where we think we're interested in diversity, then when we really learn about what America was in 1619, we're like, ooh, we don't want to watch that. We don't want to learn about that. And that's tough.
Professor McDuffie, can you react to that?
Yeah, great question. She's on point. And I think it's important that we understand the current backlash in 2023 historically, that this country has seen throughout its entire history a period of resistance, of African-American resistance, winning short-term victories following the Civil War, Reconstruction, then followed by Jim Crow, lynching, segregation, virulent white supremacy. And we in this country have been living through a backlash for the past 40 years against the Civil Rights Black Power movement, which at its core attempted to fundamentally transform this country. So yes, we are seeing a backlash against the events of 2023, the banning of books, CRT, the Supreme Court affirmative action decision. But we need to understand this current backlash is part of the backlash against the Civil Rights Black Power movement and a series of backlashes against Black people of color and their allies attempting to transform this country into truly a multiracial democracy.
And Sindra, how do you and your fellow students deal with that, right? You mentioned some of the groups, Black Students for Revolution, the African American Culture Center, the Office of Minority Student Affairs. How do you all support each other as America goes through these oscillations of Black Lives Matter, then CRT and banning books?
I feel like it's an ongoing relationship that each advising office, every supporting office on campus has with their students to make sure that they have every necessity that they could possibly need on campus, whether that's mental support, educational support, monetary support. And it directly pulls in those students that are minorities. And in the TRIO office specifically, an Office of Minority Student Affairs, supports students very strongly and provides them with peers and mentors and advisors and group meetings that can, you know, help them navigate what's going on campus and around us. Because, you know, at a, you know, public university, we're very influenced on what is going on the outside world and how it directly impacts the University of Illinois. Professor McDuffie had mentioned affirmative action, and that is going to be a very big topic that was, you know, talked about in my spring classes here at the university, but also it's going to be a very large ongoing conversation about how to, you know, work around this decision and how to continuously support the students that are on campus and how we all can move forward together and keep, you know, unifying ourselves and uniting ourselves and building each other up so that we all can be better.
Let's go to the phones again at 800-222-9455. Charles is calling from Champaign on line four. Charles, thank you for calling in.
Thank you for having me. I just want to state this. I believe, honestly, the only way things are going to change for Black people specifically in this country is we change the laws and we go to the legal system. Marching, civil awareness, conversations, they have their place. But the only way you're going to change this country is to get laws on the books. For example, LGBT community, they have hate crime laws on the books. Asian Americans, they have hate crime laws on the books. Black people, we do not. And the only way you're going to change that is if you start putting some money forth and you start changing legislation. Marching in the streets, talking about it, that has its place. But prime example, look at Black Lives Matter. That fizzled out pretty much. They received all these monetary funds from the NBA, all these different things. What piece of legislation have they put forth to make changes in this country? Something that sticks. Talking and marching has its place. Discussion has its place. But you need action. You need to put money where your mouth is at. You need to change the laws.
That's all right, Charles, I appreciate the call, Charles. I think I know we've had conversations on the show with a number of Illinois legislators who would say that they have passed a number of bills, changes to law, not as far as they wanted to go, but they've worked on some of these things. Professor McDuffie, do you want to react to that?
Sure. Thanks for the question. Yeah, I mean, I would say really all strategies fighting on all fronts is essential for Black freedom, for racial justice and social transformation. And I think it's also important to mind that historically, social movements, protest groups, they ebb and flow. Folks experience burnout. Perhaps since Sister Sindra can, you know, speak to her own experiences as a student activist and just knowing how, or if she chooses to share with us, but how, you know, so often, you know, students or folks or activists get tired. That happens. But again, I think it's important to fight on all fronts.
Dr. Lang, too, as we're coming toward the end of our conversation, I want to reflect a little. We just had the Juneteenth holiday was about a month ago, marking the freedom of the last enslaved African Americans in Texas. How, at this time, as we are still reckoning with the racism that exists in America, systemic, individual, can you talk about also celebrating Black people, supporting them, celebrating Black excellence in American life?
Thank you for that question. And as we sit with the reckoning, as we sit with that feeling of exhaustion when we're working and working and working and we don't necessarily see that the fruits of our labor, if you will, are as far as we'd hope. I think that focusing on joy, focusing on celebrations are so important because those are the moments of soul building, replenishing that we need. You know, joy is the other side of grief, right? And we need to have our cups filled, right? In order to go out and do the things that will change the world and that are changing the world. And so I think focusing on the really big things like, you know, Juneteenth becoming an official holiday, to the little things like watching our kids play at the park, right? And being able to do so safely are so important. And so finding ways to focus on the beauty, right, that we see in Blackness in the United States. There was this wonderful, and I'm not on social media a whole lot, but there was this wonderful series about Black men frolicking, right? With Black men with flowers in their hair doing cartwheels in fields. And it brought me so much joy because I think that we can focus on the things that are so heavy and difficult. And the reality is that we laugh a lot. We dance a lot. We write beautiful poetry and we share it with passion. And so focusing on all of the beauty that we offer ourselves in expression and each other is critical, right? To being human and to acknowledging our humanity, but also in binding together. And the last piece that I'll say around that is the importance of solidarity and knowing that we can lean on folks across the world and in our communities that look like us and don't look like us, right? As we're celebrating and that we can find support in being celebrated and celebrating each other.
Sindra, as a student, do you find that solidarity at the University of Illinois? Or do you struggle with it?
I would say my freshman year of college, I did struggle. That was in the fall of 2020, where we were on campus, though we were not having in-person classes. And I did struggle with finding my groove and finding my group of people. But luckily I did, you know, find a wonderful, diverse group of people that I became friends with. And it was an uphill climb from there. And there has, you know, I've had my own personal struggles with, you know, finding myself, you know, as an adult, as a Black woman on campus here and in my own community. But I would say that it's amazing the amount of, you know, support that students have on campus. And the speaker before me had mentioned Black joy. When I walk into the Bruce D. Nesbitt African American Culture Center, there is a picture background for us to take pictures with and for us to reflect on daily. It says Black joy is resistance. And we are reminded every day that, you know, joy doesn't always mean you're happy or you're gleeful. You're so, you know, invigorated with happiness, but you're moving forward. You're still putting one foot in front of the other and working to be the best person that you can be. And having that within a place that is so diverse, because it's not just African-American and Black students that come into the Culture Center, it's everybody who is welcome to come in, and they do come in, and that is where I've met so many amazing people on campus, and so many amazing speakers like to come in from the community and from abroad to speak with us on ongoing issues and triumphs and what's going on in the world as a whole. I'd say campus, it's a pretty amazing place to go and when you're feeling down, and the University of Illinois has really brought me really close to who I want to be as a person as I continue to grow.
Well, I want to thank all of you so much for being with us today and sharing your experiences and your knowledge with us on the program. Sindra Gurdes is a senior at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, majoring in African American Studies. We've also been speaking with Dr. Cynthia Langtu, professor in the Department of Clinical Psychology at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, and Professor Eric McDuffie, Associate Professor of African American Studies and History at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Sindra, Dr. Langtu, Professor McDuffie, thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're going to be talking with the Illinois-based author Toya Wolf about her novel, Last Summer on State Street. It's just out in paperback. She's going to be receiving a significant award for that and presenting at a literary festival this weekend. We're going to talk with her about her book tomorrow. We'll also have a conversation on the latest iteration of what's being billed as high-speed rail in Illinois. Is it really high-speed rail by global standards? We will dive into that tomorrow on the 21st show. Then Friday, it's our first Friday show in years. We're going to be diving into the week in review format. We'll also have arts and culture segments. So do be sure to join us on Fridays at 11, starting in 2 days and for henceforth. The 21st show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We will talk with you again tomorrow and Friday.